Hi, I'm Richard, the founder of 10 Adventures, and this is the 10 Adventures podcast. Each week, we talk to real people about real adventures as they explore this incredible planet we all live on. Welcome to the 10 Adventures podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about India. And we're talking about a really exciting place, a place called Kerala, which is in southern India. Here to share everything we want to know about this exciting part of India is George Scaria and Benny Kurian from Kerala Voyages India. With me again today is Karen. I'm excited because I've seen the photos, I've seen videos, and this seems like an exciting place to go. Hi, George. Hi, Benny. How's it going?
Hi, Richard. Thanks a lot for inviting us for today's session.
So I know Karen's interested in this because we were talking earlier about bike touring in Kerala. So I know she's got a bunch of questions. But for the listeners who don't know where Kerala is, can you just maybe just tell us, you know, where exactly is Kerala and what makes it so special compared to other Indian states?
Yeah, Kerala is, located in the southernmost part of India. It's a very narrow strip of land. And the exclusive feature of Kerala is its natural landscape. Then it is added with, the culture, the people, and the cuisine. So if you compare Kerala with other states of India, we have got a lot of unique features which other states cannot offer. From my point of view, Kerala is lacking only the desert part of a natural landscape. We do not have any deserts in Kerala. But we have got beautiful beaches, amazing lakes and rivers, a lot of waterfalls, and a lot of natural parks and, wildlife sanctuaries and tea gardens and spices, you know, whatever. If you are talking about spices, the entire India, only Kerala produces, almost 90% of spices. So it is an amazing land. And the people, is one of the most literate state in India. We boast about that, you know, we have got around 99% literacy rate in India. And our health rate is, amazing. And we have got a very beautiful health system. And of course, regarding the cultural heritage, Benny will be the better person to talk about. Benny, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. George. And Kerala is lying in 9 degrees north of equator in the northern hemisphere. And we have a tropical climate. Geographically and topographically, it is Western Ghats, which actually formed Kerala. Kerala is a narrow strip of land. But vertically, if a traveler, in the point of view of a traveler, if they travel from east to west or west to east, they can see almost all type of the landscapes from the sea, backwater, midland, and mountains. So it's a matter of less than 200 kilometers of ride from the west coast to the east or the leeward side of the mountain. They can see almost all type of landscapes, especially the tropical mountains and the high altitude grassland, Shola forest, which is the sky islands it is called, and the midland, which is intermittent with the hillocks and small mountains and lakes. So the backwater also like that. So Kerala itself is a contribution of the Western Ghats mountains. Because of the high precipitation in the high mountains, 44 rivers are flowing to the west to the Arabian Sea. So all the silt and the soil erosion that deposited in the sea, and thereby the lowland and the midland are formed. So the land barriers are formed. Even you can see that Kochi is well-known tourist center in Kerala, one of the international destinations. And Kochi was formed only in 13th century. And before that, there was no Kochi there. So it is a seismic prone area, in the sense that because of this Western Ghats, many different types of landscapes are formed there. And also we have 10 different types of tropical forests available in that area. So for adventure tourists and the wildlife enthusiasts, Western Ghats provide more than 20 endemic species of mammals and 22 endemic species of birds. And the landscape, of course, it's really amazing for hiking and camping, wildlife safaris, cycling, mountain, bike tour, and such kind of activities.
I was really amazed at the different types of scenery that you see in Kerala. I visited a few years ago and I was really impressed with, you know, you have the tropical coastal scenery and long beaches, and then you have cooler temperatures up in the mountains. Now, you use the term Western Ghats several times, and I know what the Western Ghats are, but I was thinking Ghats isn't a term that we use in North America or the UK. Could you just, define Ghats for us?
Definitely. Ghats is a Sanskrit word, and which is in India, we use the Ghatam. Ghatam become Ghats. Ghats is only mean steps. So Western Ghats is not a true mountain. It is the faulted edge of the Deccan, almost 65 million years before it was formed, only because of the seismic activities happened in the Deccan area, and thereby the west side of the subcontinent become faulted. So it is called faulted mountain. So that is why it is not like a true mountain. It is formed. It's by step. For example, if you are traveling from Cochin to Munnar, you can see that the climb is just you maybe in some area to a high elevation area, probably 100 meters. Then after there is a table land. It's another 200 meters, another table land. It is like that. It is step by steps the mountains are formed. And the Western Ghats is 1,600 kilometers long, the total length. From Gujarat to Kanyakumari, that is the southern tip. So it is running through the west coast of India. That is why geographically and in geology also, we call it Western Ghats. Actually, for us, the Western Ghat in the eastern side of Kerala, not in the west side. But as an international term, it is running through the west side of the continent. That's why it's called Western Ghats.
And that mountainous area, it's really amazing because when you're on the coast, it's so hot and humid and very tropical. And then as you're going on that road and you're ascending up into the Ghats, you can really feel the temperature drop, so that when you get to Munnar, which I was at, it's actually quite, pleasant temperature out, and so trekking in that climate's actually quite nice, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. See, that's why we have snow in January sometimes, for a few days, probably 4 or 5 days. Because even if that is less than 10 degrees north of equator, the altitude is 2,690 meters, 92 meters in Annamudi, the highest peak south of Himalayas or in South India. So in that area, above there are a landscape called high altitude Shola Forest or the Sky Islands, it's called. It is about 2000 meters, between the 2000 meters and 2600 meters. There, small but thick forests are formed with this undulated or the rolling hills of the grass mountains. So that area is amazing for hiking. You can do, multiple days of hiking through that landscape and see the beautiful mountains which are untouched. And many of these forests are 55 million years old.
In that area, would the trekking be point-to-point trekking, where you'd start in one place and then you'd trek to a different place and stay the night and then trek to a different place?
Yeah, that is up to 4 nights and 5 days we can do continuous hiking. Then after, we have to change. We have to use a four-wheel drive jeep or something to transfer from one place to another place. And there from the next hiking lap will start. So that is because certain areas are well protected and no tourists are allowed, because it's some of the highly endangered species of animals and plants are located in the core zone. So we have to avoid the core zone. So otherwise, we could have. But presently, the government is not allowed any people tourists to enter in the core zone. Otherwise, we can do even up to 4 to 5 days, that's 4 nights and 5 days, continuous hiking. And if you are okay with some sort of transferring from one point to the other point, we can do 7 nights and 8 days with a different landscape, different forest. And in the leeward of the mountain, it is the dry deciduous forest. So it's a totally a different forest type, which we can see in the leeward, in the eastern side of the mountain. There, the forest is like a savanna type. So there, it's an elephant kingdom, elephant country. There you can go for continuous hiking of 2 to 3 days and stay inside the jungle. So it's a walking safari. We are providing walking safari there.
And there are parks in Kerala that are just for animal spotting as well. Is that right, George?
Yeah. We have, for example, if you take Periyar National Park, which is one of the best, kept tiger sanctuaries in India. We got the award, for the best tiger sanctuary in India, 2 years before. So that sanctuary is, it's for wildlife spotting. There are tigers and elephants, definitely. And there are nice programs, that full day, as Benny said, full day walking safari with bamboo rafting to sight the, elephants. And again, we have got one in Chinar, near to Muna. Chinar Wildlife Sanctuary is also offering a lot of, walking safaris inside the forest. But when you compare to, the neighboring state of Karnataka, we have got, dense sanctuaries. Am I right, Benny?
But there is one difference. In Karnataka and Tamil Nadu, that region, Kerala is also part of the Nilgiri biosphere, which is declared by the UNESCO as a World Natural Heritage site. But in that part, walking safari is not possible. Only jeep safari is possible. So walking safari and jungle camps are possible only in Annamalai, that is in the leeward side of Kerala. Nowhere else it is possible in that area, especially in the biodiversity hotspot area. In Nilgiri biosphere, which is the World Natural Heritage Site, is not allowed walking safari. Only jeep safari is possible. But those who are looking for walking safaris, they can come to this Chinar Wildlife Sanctuary, Parambikulam Tiger Reserve, Annamalai Tiger Reserve. It's all in the tri-junction.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting. I never made it to any of the wildlife sanctuaries when I was in Kerala. I guess I was busy doing some hikes around Munnar instead. But one of the things that I'm really curious about is cycling in Kerala. Do you see a lot of cyclists on the road? Is it a popular place for biking?
For example, we see that cycling tours in different parts of the world and which the certain cycle tracks are there. But you cannot see the cycling tracks in Kerala, in India, or anywhere in India. So our cycling, many groups are coming every year. I think it's more than 150 groups have done last year. Just before the COVID. But what I am telling is the exact face of this landscape. And I don't mean that it is not an ideal place for the cycling. But the cycling in Kerala gives a different experience. Because you can see the one of the important aspects of Kerala, uniqueness of the Kerala is that the tradition and the fusion of the tradition and modernity. So in villages, the cycling is passing, when you are passing through the village, you can see a lot of activities. It is not meant for the tourist. And also, sometimes it is through the forest. And sometimes it is through some of the barren lands. And sometimes it is through the cultural heritage sites. We have many world heritage sites here. And also, we have the people, depends on the interest of the people. I don't think that most of the people are coming just only for physical exercise. But more than that, they want to see the culture also and the nature also. So we can offer a lot of things like that, the cultural as well as the natural heritage on the way of the cycling. What I mean is that our roads have no separate track for cycles. And also the landscape. For example, if a cycling starts from Cochin, the first phase is through the sea coast and then through the backwater and then through the midland and then towards the, a gradual ascending to the mountain. And in the mountain, there are many tracks. It's through rolling hills of the tea lands and then the spices plantation and lot of activities are there. So it is not just for the physical exercise, but to understand the culture and the life of the land also is possible in cycling through Kerala.
Benny, that sounds really incredible. And exactly, I think what makes, you know, the idea of cycling in Kerala so wonderful, that you're going through villages, you're meeting, you know, local communities, you're tasting the food, you're seeing the history. What are the roads like? Are you able to cycle on quiet roads? Are you on really busy roads? I know that's the number one question we get asked about bike tours in general. You know, people want to understand, you know, how much traffic is there?
We are taking, actually, our main major roads, main roads are really busy. That's the real fact. But what we are doing, our tracks, when we are taking people for the cycling or the motorbike ride, we are taking the, you know, the village roads. Sometimes it may be a little bit more than the regular road, but we are passing through the villages and some beautiful lake sides and the mountain side like that. So that roads are not busy. The main road is busy. So we have a different, a track we are using for cycling. For example, if sometimes people are traveling from Cochin to Munnar, it is the highway. That is very busy. But for cycling, we are not taking that path. We have an alternative path, which is narrow and not busy. And it is through the canal side, and it is through the forest track, and it is through the villages, spice plantation, and like that.
That sounds really nice. It sounds like you're finding alternate routes to kind of keep people off the busy roads, which is, I think, what cyclists are looking for, right? You know, is and to see all the scenery and be in smaller places. Now, when you were talking, you mentioned the backwaters, and I remember visiting that. But again, I think some of the listeners might not know what that involves. And one of the things that stands out to me about the backwaters is the houseboat travel that people love to do to explore it. So I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about that.
Yes, backwaters are, we have the biggest backwater, Vembanad Lake. Most of the people, tourists are coming for the houseboat ride and all there. So usually when the people start their ride, cycling and coming to the point, activity of cycling. So if they start from Cochin, there is an alternative path from Cochin to Alappi through the seaside. And therefrom, they come to the western side of the backwater. And from the western side, they can go for the houseboat ride. So immediately from the cycle, they can transfer to this houseboat and spend a leisure day in the houseboat watching the birds and enjoying the cuisine, backwater cuisine. And thereby, the next day morning, they can reach the east side of the backwater. Then thereby, our vehicles carry the cycle to the east side, and therefrom they can continue their journey to the other side. So what is backwater is a question, I know that, because it is different from the brackish water. It is not brackish water, it is backwater. The backwaters was formed almost in totally separated from the sea about almost 1,000 years before, when a land barrier was formed between the Arabian Sea and this backwater area, that is the paddy fields area. So it was in 13th century, there was a tsunami was happened, and thereby the land barrier was re-emerged. And the total connection between the sea and this fresh water coming from the mountain is separated. So it is only now, only one mouth is open to the sea, and six rivers are discharging fresh water to this lake. So this, certain season, this fresh water is more dominant than the saline water, and certain period during the summertime there may be more salinity. So a special kind of or biological space is created in this backwater, which give it's a lot of migratory birds are coming there, then a lot of different species of other animals are there, and mostly the birds. And in certain area period, it's a migration of more than 62 species of birds from other part of the world are coming to this place. So those who are interested in birds also, they can see the birds in their way, and some sort of endemic fish is there, and a lot of activities. And this is the just like in Holland, the agriculture land is below the sea level. That is an interesting fact. the rice cultivation, you can see that when you are going through the boat, you can see that you are elevated down from the farm field. And along this canal side, you can see the people are farming. That is mainly the rice cultivation is in lower elevation. That is below the sea level. That's also an interesting fact. And there is a very interesting and old technique they are using to taking this water inlet and taking this water out. It's all very traditional methods they are using. So this landscape is very much interesting. I hope it is almost I explained about the general idea about backwater.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, you've painted a picture of a very peaceful place where you're flowing in the water and you're seeing birds and palm trees and local people and farmland. So it sounds like a lovely place to relax. Now, one thing people are always interested in is the food of different locations. And my understanding is that the food in Kerala is certainly distinct from other types of Indian food. Do one of you want to tell us about what the food's like in Kerala?
Actually, you know, Kerala cuisine, as I told you in the introduction, you know, cuisine is one of the uniqueness of Kerala. People, you know, definitely know they like Kerala food, maybe because, you know, we use a lot of coconuts. And as our name, the place name, reminds us, you know, Kerala is a land of coconuts. So if you take any of our curries, you know, we use a lot of coconuts. And of course, you know, we use a lot of spices because, you know, we are the spice center of India. So we have everything, you know, here. So that is one thing. But the biggest uniqueness in Kerala is, you know, if you travel maybe 50 kilometers, the next 50 kilometers, you know, you'll be seeing a totally different cuisine. It is not that, you know, Kerala is having a single cuisine throughout the state. It's not like that. For example, as you said, backwaters. You know, when you go to the backwaters, as many use the term, backwater cuisine is really a different cuisine. I mean, we call it as Alapi cuisine also. And when you go on the houseboat, you might have experienced that, you know, all the cooks are men. We have got around 3,000, 4,000 houseboats in the backwaters. And you just imagine, we have got around 4,000 men cooks in Kerala, only in the backwaters. So, I mean, yeah. So there is a lot of difference, you know, when you go to the central Travancore, the cuisine is different. When you go to the northern Malabar, it's like a Muslim cuisine, I mean, like biryanis and, you know, these kind of things. I think Benny also have something. He's also a good cook, you know, so he will have something to add also.
In the backwater area, you know, especially depends on the religion and the region, they have different cuisine and very interesting, especially the Syrian Christian cuisine of the backwater area, duck and some sort of duck curries and some sort of beautiful vegetable curries. And we have a pearl spot fish, which is endemic to that backwater, and it's very tasty and well known. So they cook very, very good pearl spot fish and different styles of pearl spot fishes they are making. Many other sort of cuisines, like all made with rice, because wheat is not much wheat we use in Kerala, but mostly people using rice, different sort of rice and rice flowers, flour and such kind of things are using. And in the mountain area, the cuisine is different. And in cycling time, and especially in the camping, in the trekking and camping time, we are providing freshly cooked food in the camps.
One of the things I remember when I was staying on the coast in Kerala, I was in one of the towns there, and in the evening, all of the restaurants would have out the fish and seafood on ice in front of the restaurant. And so in the evening, you'd walk up and down and you'd go to the various restaurants and see what they had and see what it would choose what you wanted, and then you would actually choose the piece of fish that you wanted or seafood, and then they'd cook it for you, you know, in one of many different ways. So we were really impressed with, because then, of course, the seafood was so fresh, right?
Yeah. You know, there's a very touristy term, like, you know, you buy, we cook. That is what, you know, the people, you know, yeah. So, I mean, when the tourists walk, I mean, on the streets, you know, the fishermen, they will be shouting like this, you buy, we cook. There are very nice, you know, seafood restaurants especially in the tourist areas like Kochi and all. You know, you can walk into the nice restaurants and then you can choose your fish and you can, I mean, cook to order. And many of the good restaurants are now, I mean, featured with European cuisine. If you are not, you know, good on eating some spicy food, you can tell them so they can grill the fish, you know, just like what you get, maybe with a little bit of pepper powder or something like that. So, I mean, seafood is, I mean, really a big part in Kerala. And we are the biggest beef eaters in India.
And the buffalo, very good buffalo curry available.
Oh, now we're all going to be hungry after we finish this. So you were mentioning lots of local communities that, you know, travelers are passing through. And many people are concerned about the effect of tourism on local communities. And I think you guys were saying that you thought that some of the local communities were actually benefiting from tourism.
Yeah, for sure. Because, you know, Kerala is the pioneer state in India, which is, having a special purpose vehicle called Responsible Tourism Mission, which was started in 2014. And, you know, I mean, they have introduced a lot of, you know, local community involvement in tourism in Kerala. And now it is being taken over by the local communities and even the tourism stakeholders, like, you know, the tour operators like us. For example, our company is a sustainable company. We are certified by Travel Life. So our focus was, with supporting the local communities, especially the women entrepreneurs. We have got a lot of, you know, I mean, women entrepreneurs who are doing cookery shows for our tourists. And we have got women guides in villages, backwater villages, you know, who guide the tourists in the village activities. So, I mean, this is happening in Kerala like, I mean, anything. You cannot see this kind of a community-oriented tourism activity in any other part of India. And Kerala, all the governments, you know, were really, I mean, they have gone really deep into the local level to bring up. And now, you know, they are connecting all the agri farms. You know, you can do farm tourism. Like, you know, if you have got a plantation, you know, you can invite the guests to your home. They can stay there. They can go for farming. And the benefits are really passed to the community. I can be very sure. And there are a lot of women entrepreneurs have come up in tourism. Just like, you know, by sitting at home, they can make money. Tourists will come to their home to experience, you know, what they are doing, how their kitchen looks like, how they cook food. Or how they make the coir. I mean, so definitely Kerala is the best place. And I mean, fortunately, our tours are all, I mean, having a lot of sustainable experience, I mean, activities in the itinerary itself. So whenever our tourists, you know, do a tour, I mean, through 10 Adventures and all the programs we design for 10 Adventures, again, you know, it's all having a lot of sustainable experience tours. So, I mean, we are really compensating a bit of our revenue to the local community also. And it is happening, I mean, in a great extent in Kerala. And Benny will be able to say about what he has done for the, I mean, tribal community. I mean, he was the trainer for the tribal community to bring up them as the guides for, I mean, taking people into the wildlife sanctuaries. He was one of the first trainers, you know, who, promoted a eco conservation society.
And in wildlife tourism also, we are training is given to the local people. That is the people who are living inside the forest. They are the Aboriginal people or the Adivasis, we call. So we selected them and give them the training how to guide people for bird watching and how to take people for the wildlife area to see or sport wildlife. They are very good in spotting wildlife. So we are just giving some tips for them to how to handle people. And from 2000 onwards, our government, along with the public participation or the participatory forest management program, we introduced there and we selected these people who are once guided the poachers and the smugglers. And then we rehabilitate them and give them training. And now they are getting very good income from tourism. So when a tourist is spending 1,000 rupees there, out of that, almost 950 rupees goes to the society, which is formed by these tribal people. And we have many other fringe benefits also the government is giving them. So throughout the year, they are getting a salary. And also the blowback of this profit is in their accounts, and which that they can use in a certain area, I mean, period. They don't have enough job, or they have some disease or something happened, or if they want some food materials, they will help.
I think all these things you're doing to connect travelers with local communities, to support local communities, it's what makes travel exciting. If you go on, you know, a traditional tour from 20 or 30 years ago, you're separated from the communities you're visiting. You're separated from the culture, the food. And it's almost like watching a movie. And it's only when you actually get to interact with the communities, with the people, that you actually learn about what makes, you know, the place you're visiting so special. And then to ensure that local communities, you know, get a good deal out of that. I think it's just so important, not only for, you know, the people in Kerala, but for the travelers to know that their trip is actually positively influencing the places they're going, because that's not always the case. And so George and Betty, I think you guys should be applauded for doing so much to help the communities where you guys live and work.
Yeah, thank you, Richard. You know, actually, you know, we are really enjoying that, first of all. And second thing, you know, Kerala is a safe place, you know, to do this, you know, because as I told you, you know, it's a literate state. So, for example, you know, if you just walk into a house, you know, without any kind of advance notice, you can see, you know, how they receive you. You can see a smile on the face of the people. They are not surprised. They are not shocked. They ask you to come in. They will offer you a cup of tea. So, I mean, that kind of a cultural advantage Kerala has got because of the education. So, I mean, we are so happy, and they don't mind, you know, I mean, going and taking a photo with them, you know, and they don't mind allowing you to get into their kitchen without any notice, you know. So this makes a lot of difference. And also, if you go to the villages and all, you know, it's very clean. It's not like, I mean, what you call shabby, like, you know, a dirty city or something. So, I mean, we are happy that, you know, we can take the tourists, you know, directly into a village. It is not that, you know, a street made for tourists. It's not like that. We are just taking them to the living, scenario.
So, George and Benny, I want to thank you so much for sharing so much on Kerala. This was a ton of detail. You know, we really got into the history and the information, and, you know, the only type of information you get from people who are experts in the place they work and love. You've made me want to, you know, get on my bike and explore, or get in a houseboat and just enjoy some downtime in Kerala. So I'm hoping, as, you know, COVID gets better, that, you know, myself and lots of other people can make it to India and explore this incredible place. But thank you for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Richard. You know, thanks a lot, you know, for this great opportunity. This is the first time, you know, we are, I mean, being invited, you know, by a foreign, I mean, partner, you know, for a podcast. So that makes a lot of difference. You know, we are so happy. Yeah. We welcome you, both of you, to come back to Kerala, to experience Kerala in a different way.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the 10 Adventures podcast. If you liked it, why not give us a review? Better yet, subscribe and get inspired again and again. Also, if you want to find your own adventures, why not check out 10adventures.com, where you can use our free resources to plan your own trip or book a tour in over 60 countries and make your own epic memories on your next adventure.